talk, complete disk encryption in FreeBSD. Those who have taken a look at the schedule probably know that tomorrow there's also a talk on disk encryption, but in contrast to that, I'm not going to talk about legal issues or give an overview over what's available with tools, operating systems, or whatever. The goal here is to work. And the focus obviously is on complete disk encryption. So just to get a picture of the audience, who is using a BSD operating system in here? And who has experience with Unix in general? So you guys all use Linux, right? Well, there's a few differences between BSD and Linux, and probably a bit elaborate on that. Before I jump all into the gory details of the implementation, I would like to give a bit of background and motivation why we would like to do this. So I would like to start with the most basic question, basically, why would we like to use in-storage encryption? Now, instead of asking rhetorical questions here, I would like to make my point by using some quotes of news articles I've collected over the time. You can read them for yourself.
Can you read them back there?
Should I read them out?
Yes.
Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm sure you find scary ones on the net, but just to give you a picture. So, what's interesting about this news? Well, what they have in common is basically it doesn't really matter whether the firewall was properly configured, they had an antivirus software, whether they used the Redmond operating system or not. Basically, it doesn't matter because the attacker had physical access to the medium, in that case the hard disk, the tape, or whatever. So how do we solve this? Well, it's basically easy. We just encrypt the data in storage while it's on the hard disk, not in transmission. Well, there's basically two ways to do that. One is file-based encryption, and one is partition-based encryption. File-based encryption, as the name implies, you can decide for each file individually whether you want to encrypt it or not and how. Tools of this, I'm sure you know PGP or GNU-PG. Encrypt is, maybe you know it, maybe you don't. Well, the advantages of file-based encryption. Well, basically, you can save CPU time on the stuff that you think is not really necessary, the effort. If you have a 600 megabyte FreeBSD image, well, you can discuss whether it's worth encrypting it or not. There is also the advantage of having different keys for different files, although reality shows somewhat the opposite behavior. Drawbacks, metadata is not encrypted. It means stuff like file name, size, ownership, and all this stuff that's encrypted in the file system, that's stored in the file system, is not encrypted with file-based encryption. So if you're being investigated and someone finds a file extortion letter on your hard disk, then maybe it doesn't really matter what's stored in the file, even if it's encrypted. The file name already tells a lot. And there's also something that I call the leakage risk. So what is it? Well, the story goes as follows. You know that it's a risk to store your files not encrypted. So what you do is use either file-based encryption or partition-based encryption. Let's assume that you encrypt the whole partition. I'm coming to that later. Just let's assume you have an encrypted partition, you put all your stuff on there. Well, you might think it's safe because it's encrypted, but the problems basically start when you open a file, for example, a text document with, well, quite complex applications such as OpenOffice. The problem is a lot of these applications store temporary data. So you might have a temporary copy in the temp directory of the actual file that's encrypted. But the problem is if you don't have the temp directory encrypted, then even if the file itself is encrypted on the partition, it leaks to the unencrypted temp directory. So even if the file is deleted afterwards, it still resides physically on the medium until it's overwritten. That's the problem. And also the swap partition, which is by default not encrypted, represents a risk because, well, you probably would be surprised how much interesting stuff you can find on there. Well, the leakage risk, to summarize it, your encrypted data is leaked to an unencrypted part of the medium. If, for example, the temp directory, the var temp, is on an unencrypted part of the partition and an application stores a temporary copy in there, then, well, it's a problem. So implications, file-based encryption, it becomes basically useless. So using PGP or GNUPG to encrypt your stuff, it doesn't really give you a lot of advantage because a lot of the stuff just leaks to an unencrypted part of the medium. Well, there is another way to do it, file partition-based encryption, where you basically take a whole partition and encrypt it. An advantage there is that the metadata, such as file name, size, and stuff like that, is encrypted. And all of the data you put there is also encrypted by default, so you don't have to select for each file, encrypt this, leave that unencrypted, encrypt this. And basically, it reduces a lot of the leakage risk. But the problem is the leakage risk is still existent. The main problem basically is what does actually go onto the encrypted partition, what does not. It's not so easy to tell. But we have a far more serious problem than the leakage risk. Because so far we have assumed that the applications and the operating system itself are stored unencrypted on the hard disk. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to store the operating system and the applications encrypted, but the data not. So let's go on. Well, I'm not saying complete disk encryption should be used by everybody here, because there's a lot of trade-offs. And what you have to ask yourself is, how secure do you consider your data and program code from unauthorized access to be in, for example, a hotel room, your office, your parked car? How many people in here feel comfortable with leaving their laptop in their hotel room? Well, all right. Well, the conclusion basically is, unless you keep a notebook inside at all times, you don't really have a guarantee that someone hasn't compromised either the operating system or some critical applications and so on. Well, what is the solution? We encrypt the operating system and the applications as well. But there's the next problem. If you encrypt everything, and I mean everything, kernel, boot code, and the whole stuff, then we have a problem because today's computers, they can't boot encrypted code. You can't have an encrypted MBR with partition table and so on. It doesn't work. So to sum it up, we have to load the operating system from a non-encrypted medium, but we can't do it from the hard disk because it is too risky. I mean, you can't remove the hard disk each time from the laptop you want to leave it in a place. So what we're going to do is basically, because we have to store the operating system, at least core parts such as boot code and kernel, on a non-encrypted medium, is that we use a medium that we carry with ourselves at all times. So the best solution is basically to use a USB memory stick, because they are really small and light, and they also have a lot of space, at least for what we need it for. And also they are rewritable many times, and the operating system recognizes them as a hard disk, basically. You can use alternative media such as CD-ROM, for example, these small 8-centimeter disks. They are bits harder to carry around, but they work. You don't need read-write access for operation. Of course, you have to master the medium, but if you use it, you just have to read it out. So actual implementation. What do you need? Well, you need a bootable and a removable medium. That's very important. Removable because you have to remove it from the laptop and carry it with you at all times. And of course it has to be bootable because the operating system is going to be booted from there. Minimum size, well, that's really not a lot. About 5 megabytes should do it, but really that's the absolute minimum. If you want more kernel modules and stuff like that, I'm going to elaborate on that later, then about 20 or 25 megabytes should do it. And as the title says, the whole thing is going to be based on FreeBSD. You probably can do it on other operating systems, but here I'm going to focus on FreeBSD. So what you need is a FreeBSD 5 or 6. You can't do it with 4 because the functionality is not there. Also, what's needed is you already need a running FreeBSD system, 5X or later. The FreeBSD installation disks, they have a so-called fixit live file system on there, which you can boot from CD, and basically you get the whole FreeBSD system running without even having to install anything. If you want a graphical environment, you can take a look at FreeSpy. That's really, you can boot it from CD and you have a complete graphical environment with basically everything you need. And of course, the machine, the notebook or whatever, has to be capable of booting from the medium here. If you use a USB memory stick, it might be a problem for older machines, but bootable CD-ROMs should probably work on most machines. So those who are not so familiar with FreeBSD, just overview over the namespace. We have the device nodes in /dev. You probably, that's not something new. ATA hard disks, AD, SCSI hard disks, DA, and so on. If you need more information, please take a look at the man pages in section 4, such as DA4. And if you want to get an overview over the devices the kernel has recognized, you can take a look at this file here. Well, in FreeBSD and the other BSDs as well, there is a difference to Linux, because what we call a partition in PC terminology is actually called a slice in FreeBSD. And this so-called slice can be further partitioned inside. So what in PC terminology might be the primary partition is a slice in FreeBSD, and this primary partition can further be partitioned into, for example, boot partition, swap partition, and other partitions. So you can have the swap partition, the boot partition, and up to another 7, in total 7 partitions inside a slice. If you take, for example, an ATA disk, that's AD and starts with 0, then you have the first partition in PC terminology is the slice, S1, and then you have the boot partition, which is agreed on the letter A, swap partition is B, and so on. So DA1, S3B is the second SCSI disk on which we have the first slice, and B is the swap partition. If you're not familiar with that, please read this stuff carefully before you start typing in stuff. Otherwise, you will erase the wrong hard disk, delete the slice, which is not supposed to be deleted, and so on. So if you're not familiar with FreeBSD, please check this out carefully. That's just an overview. And as the usual disclaimer, please back up all your data before you start. So I don't want to be responsible for any damages. I mean, the whole point is that we erase the entire hard disk and set it up new. Well, the assumptions, I will assume that you have an ATA disk in your hard disk that's going to be AD0, and the removable USB medium that attaches via USB bus as a UMass, as a USB mass storage medium. And FreeBSD treats it like SCSI hard disk, and that's DA0. So you have AD0 and DA0, so please check twice before you hit enter. And you also have to adjust them if, for example, you use the second ATA disk, which is going to be AD1. Don't type AD0 if you want AD1. Okay, before we start, the whole thing is basically pointless if you just erase your files on there, set up the encrypted disk, and then the encrypted data is basically stored while the unencrypted data is still accessible on the sector level of the disk. So what we have to do is basically we have to clean the entire hard disk. You can do this in two ways. Either you can override the whole hard disk with zero values or with entropy. Well, zero values, it's obviously the fastest, but the problem is if you write zero values over the whole hard disk, then it's immediately clear which parts of the disks are data and which ones are unused. So people who look for potential clues about the keys might exploit this fact. But in most cases, it's probably not a major risk, so you have to evaluate, do I want more security, or is the machine really too slow to generate so much entropy? If you want entropy, then use device random. So if you want to do complete disk encryption, you have basically two tools in FreeBSD. One is GBD, geom-based disk encryption, and the other one is Gailey. GBD was released in 5.0 and Gailey in 6.0. And there is a lot of interesting, basically, improvements in Gailey because you have different ciphers, AES, Blowfish, Triple DES. You also have a variable key length. I think the maximum is 256 bits. In GBD, you only have AES 128 bit. And basically, the most important difference between GBD and Gailey is that Gailey allows the kernel to mount an encrypted root partition. GBD does not allow to do this. So we have to take a detour to make the whole thing work. But explaining this will also show you some interesting aspects in the booting process and how this stuff can be solved. So I don't know whether we have enough time to discuss both, but I will start with GBD. The solution one is to have an unencrypted root file system. Please note that this is not, this doesn't stay in contrary to complete disk encryption because the root file system does not have to be on the hard disk. Now, the solution of having an unencrypted root file system works with both GBD and Gailey, but I'm going to take GBD as an example here. So we can discuss the second solution, which only applies to Gailey. And this way you have no view over both tools. Well, GBD, it's available since 5.0, and FreeBSD was, the 5X branch was declared stable since the 5.3 release. So please use the latest release because 5.0 through 5.2 are not really stable. They are development releases. The cipher is 128-bit AES. And a very important feature is basically that GBD does not care what file system you put on there. So you can have basically MS-DOS-FS, you can have standard Unix file system or whatever you want. Obviously, we're going to use the Unix file system, FreeBSD's default here. And the passphrase, that's also very important. If you change the passphrase, you don't have to set up the complete thing new. You just change the passphrase and you go on. A lot of file system crypto solutions, they really require you, if you want to change the passphrase, you have to basically wipe out the whole partition, set it up new, and, well, it's not really feasible to do that. More information you can find in the man pages. Please read them carefully if you really want to do some stuff that's not discussed here. Well, now we can start. GBD init, you have to initialize the hard disk first before you can use the whole thing. Here you specify the device, AD0, that's our hard disk. And there is the L parameter, and it's used for the so-called log file. I will discuss this in short. Then you enter the passphrase and confirm it. Now the log file, it's very important that you store this in a safe place, because if it's not available later, your data is lost. So the log file, what is it? It's 16 bytes of data, and it's required to get access to the master key. The log file is not the key, it's just data you need to get access to the master key, which is then used to encrypt and decrypt all the data. Well, basically, GBD does not force you to use a log file. Instead, if you don't specify the L parameter, GBD will just store this 16 bytes in the first sector of the medium. But this way, you would only need a passphrase to get access to the data. Well, since we need a removable device anyway, we can store the log file on the removable medium, and this way, we need to use a log file and a passphrase to get access to the data, which is commonly referred to as two-factor authentication. So if you boot the machine up, you insert a removable medium or attach it, GBD will read out the log file data on the removable medium, and you have to enter the passphrase. If the passphrase is not available or the log file is not available, you don't get access to the data, even if you know the passphrase. So let's sum up. In order to get access to the plain text, you need obviously the encrypted data itself, the passphrase, and the log file. If the log file is lost, even if it's destroyed or lost or whatever, then even if you know the passphrase, you won't get access to the data. The whole design of GBD is quite complex, and if you really want to get a detailed perspective of the whole thing, then I suggest you read Paul Henning Kemp's paper, GM-based disk encryption, which really goes into a lot of details. Now, after we've initialized the whole thing, we can basically do what's known as attaching. You have to, each time you want to get access to the decrypted data, you have to attach it. GBD attach, then you specify the device parameter, this is an L here, not an I. And again, the path of the log file. Then you enter the passphrase. And now what happens here is really interesting, because it's an example of good software design, in my opinion. What happens is, if you entered the correct passphrase and you specified the correct log file, then GBD will create a second device node. The original device node, AD0, still exists. And if you access it, you will actually see what's on the hard disk, which is the ciphertext, the encrypted data. And the device node AD0.BDE is created by GBD. And it's basically a pseudo device that gives access to the plain text. And you can treat this device node like the original AD0, so you can format it, partition it, whatever. Now, a warning. After you've attached the device node and you have the .bd device node, then you have access to the plain text. It doesn't matter whether it's already mounted or not. You have access to the plain text, as soon as you've attached the device. And it remains this way until you either shut the system down or you explicitly detach it. So in the time between attaching and detaching the device, there is no additional protection by GPD because you have access to the plain text and the key material is available. So please keep this in mind. It doesn't matter whether the encrypted partition is mounted or not. As soon as it's attached, you have access to the plain text. Now, slicing and partitioning, usually FreeBSD uses Node.js. We use sysinstall for that. Unfortunately, sysinstall is quite old and isn't really able to handle these BDE device nodes correctly. So what we have to do is we have to manually use the tools in order to partition and slice the disk. We can't use sysinstall. Now, since this is complete disk encryption and we assume that only FreeBSD will be used on the hard disk, we can basically skip slicing, which in PC terminology is used as partitioning, and start using FreeBSD partitions on the hard disks. So we use BSD label, W writes first standard label on it, and with E you can edit it. And please notice this is AD0.BDE. Don't use device AD0 because that's the ciphertext, and if you do that, you overwrite the initialized hard disk and you have to start new. If you enter the E parameter with BSD label, then you get an editor, and basically you have to specify now the partitions. A is the boot partition, B is the swap, and so on. You just, you have to consider what's useful for you. The second and the third columns are size and offset, that's in sectors. Then FS type, you can use either 4.2 BSD for all partitions that use a standard UFS file system, and the swap partition uses just swap as FS type. The stuff here you can just leave, the default values are okay. That's an example of a 100 megabyte disk, so keep the numbers a bit down. You have a boot partition, a swap partition, and you have an additional partition D. The C partition is the whole disk. Please don't edit anything on the C partition. Now, what's really interesting is the device naming. We already know access to the plain text data is AD0.BDE. Now, the boot partition on the encrypted hard disks is now AD0.BDEA. The swap partition is B, and so on. In the top part is basically if you first encrypt the hard disks and then you partition it. You can also do it the way around. You can first partition the hard disk, and then you basically would have to encrypt each partition individually. In that case, the names of the device nodes, they change. If you first partition and then you encrypt, then you have AD0A.BDE. So you have to encrypt each partition individually. What we are going to do is we first encrypt the hard disk and then we partition it. Well, the funny thing basically about this is that you can also use multiple operating systems on the same hard disk. You just have to use one slice for each operating system. You can have, on one slice, you can have FreeBSD. On the second slice, you can have Linux. And the slice where FreeBSD resides is basically, you can encrypt the whole thing. So even if you use Linux and you get rooted, the partition on which FreeBSD resides is still completely encrypted, so the attacker won't be able to modify the data to anything useful. This is a bit out of the scope of this lecture, so I'm going to really focus on complete disk encryption, where we encrypt the whole hard disk. Now we've encrypted the hard disk and we have partitioned it, so we have the device loads. What we have to do now is we have to create the file systems. So new file system, device AD0.BDE, A, boot partition, the swap obviously doesn't need a file system, D, and so on. For each partition, you must create a file system. Now, the actual installation of FreeBSD. Usually, we would use, again, sysinstall, but sysinstall, again, gives us the finger and says you can't do that. The reason for that is that the BDE device loads are not listed by sysinstall, so you can't even select them. So what this means is we have to, the various distributions that make up the FreeBSD installation, we have to manually install them and also do some post-installation issues such as time zone, keyboard web, and stuff like that we have to set up manually. Well, installing it. Yeah? Well, as we're going to see, it's not that much work, but I agree it should be done a lot easier. The problem is sysinstall is a quite ancient tool in FreeBSD, probably one of the oldest, and it's really, I'm told that it requires a lot of changes to make it work. And there's also some stuff that people want to integrate and which just puts a lot of work to the developers, and sysinstall is really not up to the task. There is now a project that people work on a completely new installer for FreeBSD, so maybe there is some hope. But it's not that much work. Yeah. Well, is there another question? Backup.
Yeah.
But you mean just copy an existing system on the partition? Well, you can do that. Well, just let me go on. It's not that much work to install the system. Well, if you use the fixit live file system, I assume you have the distribution of FreeBSD mounted on disk and the encrypted. And encrypted boot partition unfixed. So the way that the FreeBSD installation disks are laid out in the file system is you have a directory in the root of the CD-ROM, which is named after the release, for example, 5.4 release, 6.0 beta, and so on. And in there, you have directories which are named after the distributions, such as space, man pages, games, and so on. What you really need is space. You have to install that distribution. The installation scripts inside these distributions, they are really programmed smartly. So all you have to do is you have to export an environment variable, which is called testdir, and you have to set it to the location where you have mounted the encrypted boot partition, which is, in our case, device AD0.BDEA, which is mounted on fixed. So we just type in this one, change into the directory. Base is the distribution we need, which is mandatory. And then you execute install sh. And this basically installs you the whole all files that are necessary for running a FreeBSD system. If you need additional distributions, such as man pages and so on, just replace the base directory with man pages, games, or whatever, and re-execute the install script. It's not that much work. I agree it could be done a lot easier, but we just have to leave that for now. So after you've installed the distributions you want to install, you basically have a fully functional system on the encrypted hard disk. And the boot partition, the swap partition is also set up. But the problem is now, since everything is encrypted, we can't boot from the hard disk, which is what I mentioned at the beginning. So we have to basically set up the removable medium now, which is the USB memory stick, or if you want the CD-ROM image or whatever. Now, the removable medium, since this one is not going to encrypt, you can use this install for that. So just use FDisk, and the device here is device DA0, so please, again, note the difference. Size about 8 megabytes should do it. If you want all the kernel modules, use 25 megabytes or more. But with the current memory sticks, it shouldn't really be a problem with space. So now, on the removable medium, we do not need a swap partition because we're going to use the one on the encrypted hard disk. I'm going to assume that the file system on the removable medium is now mounted on removable. So if you run the whole sysinstall process, you create the slice partitions and create the file system. So in order to boot from the removable medium, we basically have to just copy the boot directory from the already installed system on the fixed hard disk to the removable medium. So copy the whole thing. Fixed is now the hard disk, the encrypted boot, to the removable medium. Now the kernel modules. Linux also has kernel modules, so I assume you're already familiar with that. On FreeBSD, it works as follows. You have basically executable, which is called the loader. You have, if you switch on the computer, then the BIOS will read out the master boot record on the hard disk. Then, depending on which slice or partition, PC terminology, you select, then if you select the FreeBSD slice, then the boot code will read out the disk label. The disk label will read out the loader, and the loader will finally give control to the kernel. So the loader executable will first read out the file bootloader.conf, which lists the kernel modules which have to be loaded when the kernel is loaded. The problem is, if you use GBD, you can't load the kernel module after you've executed GBD. There is a kernel module for GBD and also a user land utility. But you have to load the kernel module before you execute the user land utility. So you have to just add an entry for GBD load into bootloader.conf. Now, the modules which you don't need, you can delete them if space is a problem. One cool thing about FreeBSD booting process is that you basically can gzip everything. You can even gzip the kernel and all the modules, and it will still work. The problem is not so much the space, but the loading time. If you boot from a USB removable medium, then even if you have USB 2, the protocol here in that the BIOS speaks is just USB 1, and the loading time is really a bit slow, so it's important to really compress the whole boot code as much as you can. And one important thing is, please do not mix different versions on the removable medium and the fixed hard disk. So if you boot 5.4 kernel from the removable medium, please don't load 6.0 modules from the hard disks or vice versa or whatever. You will get into problems. Now, GBD has a problem, and that's it does not allow the kernel to mount encrypted partitions, root partitions. So the way it works is, if you want to attach an encrypted partition, you have to run the GPD userland utility. But, well, the problem, if you run a userland utility, then first init has to be called first process, and init is created by the kernel. But the problem is the root file system is mounted by the kernel before init is created, so we have a typical boot process problem. So the only conclusion basically we can make is that we cannot use an encrypted root file system if you use GPD. Now the solution, well, we create a memory disk. And this memory disk we can use as the root file system. And on this memory disk, we basically put all the stuff that's necessary to run the GPD userland utility, and then to mount the encrypted partitions in a directory of the memory disk, and then we load the whole stuff off the encrypted hard disk. So that's basically the idea if we have to use GPD. Well, the memory disk, just create an image first, about 10 megabytes should do it. Then we need a device node. This is FreeBSD specific, I guess. After you have the device node, just create the file system on it and then mount it. I will assume that the memory disk is now mounted on memdisk/memdisk. Now, what you need, since the memory disk is going to be mounted as the root file system, you obviously need a directory where we can root the encrypted boot partition. So I will assume that we use the directory safe for that. Now, you need additional directories which serve as mount points, such as CD-ROM, very important, device, disk mount, and etc. Now, what we need on the memory disk, on etc, is basically the RC script. And again, here comes the log file. We have to copy the log file from the location wherever you stored it at the beginning, now onto the memory disk, because the memory disk is going to be routed as the root file system. And we execute all the stuff on that and provide the log file to GPDE. And also very important, please notice, each time you change the passphrase of GPD, the contents of the log files of the log file changes. So it's going to be 16 bytes, but the content changes. So if you change the passphrase to the encrypted hard disk or partition or whatever, then you have to update the log file on the memory disk. Otherwise, you won't have access to your data anymore. Now, after the kernel has booted up, loader passes control to the kernel, and the kernel in turn executes init, which is the first process. Init in turn calls RC, and the important thing about RC is it's not a binary executable, it's a text script which we can easily edit. So what we do is basically we modify the RC script. We add a few commands, only the stuff necessary to attach the encrypted partition, mount it, and then load all the stuff. Basically, RC will continue loading the whole stuff off the encrypted hard disk since we have attached and mounted it in the RC script. What we need for that is GPD binary, mount, of course, and some other stuff. Well, all these important tools can be found in the so-called rescue directory, which is part of any FreeBSD installation. And the important thing about that is that it's statically linked binaries, so you don't have any dependencies on libraries. If you execute the GPD binary, then you only have that binary. You don't have dependencies on libraries and whatever. So we can just copy the whole rescue directory onto the memory disk. But since the whole tools are just hard links, we have to use tar. We can't just copy them onto the memory disk. Otherwise, we have about 470 megabytes of code, all the same binaries. Now, after we've done that, basically, we have The removable medium is now bootable. The loader calls the kernel. Kernel calls init. Init calls RC. And RC then mounts and attaches the encrypted hard disk. But after that, the memory disk is still the root file system and is always going to be until the system is shut down. So what we need on the memory disk is basically symbolic links pointing from the root on the memory disks to the actual directories on the encrypted hard disk. So we have to just create symbolic links to where safe the encrypted boot partition is mounted. So for example, we have to make sure that the S-bin directory, which is now in safe S-bin, has an entry in the root, so all applications, the kernel finds the files. Now we have to glue the whole thing together. Now I already mentioned that we have to modify RC, the RC script, which is on the memory disk. Now you have, maybe it changes with the release, but in 5.4 release, it's slide 51, you have to insert the following commands. As I already said, we're going to use the executables in the rescue directory, gpd attach, AD0 device, and then specify the log file. The log file is now on the memory disk. After we've attached the whole thing, we obviously have to mount it. AD0.bdea is the encrypted boot partition on the hard disk, and we mount this on safe, which is a directory on the memory disk. After that, this one is 6.0 specific. I don't know why, but for some reason you have to enforce write access to the memory disk. I don't know why, but it's got to be. Now, after that, we can basically remove the etc directory from the memory disk. All that's in the etc directory on the memory disk is the log file and the RC script. But of course, you have a lot of other stuff in the etc directory. So we just link the etc directory on the hard disk to the entry in the root directory on the memory disk. So what basically happens is after the kernel calls init, init calls RC, and these commands are executed, and after we're here, we have the encrypted boot partition basically mounted on safe. And since we have symbolic links in the root on the memory disk, all these links point to the actual directories on the encrypted disk. So after the script has executed here, we can just resume the normal operation, and all the rest of the booting process is loaded from the encrypted hard disk. Now, after we've done that, the memory disk is basically, we have all the stuff we need, just unmount it and detach the memory disk. And the image, this is now the image for the memory disk. You can also gzip that and save a lot of space. Now, the memory disk image here, this one is going to be on the removable medium, but we have to tell the loader executable that it has to load the memory disk. Therefore, we have to specify an entry in bootloader.conf where we already had the GPD module, MFS root load yes, and then all the stuff that's necessary. Especially important is the type here. This is not an ordinary kernel module, but just a memory disk image, so we have to specify that, otherwise the kernel will probably panic or whatever. Now, how does the whole thing work? So we boot from the removable medium. After loader is executed, it will read out the contents of the bootloader file. In there, we told that the GPD kernel module has to be loaded, and the memory disk image has to be loaded. Now if the after the kernel has booted up and roots mounts the root file system. Then if you have the mdroot option compiled in, then the memory disk image will automatically be mounted as the root file system if you have loaded one. Then we execute init, rc, and the whole stuff attach and mount the encrypted disk, and we can complete the whole booting process. What we need now is an entry for the swap partition and the file etc fs tab. You have to do it on the hard disk, not on the removable medium. Once we have attached the encrypted hard disk, we don't have to access the removable medium again. We can even remove it from the computer. Now, what you've basically now is running FreeBSD system. All you have to do is adjust some stuff, such as the root password, time zone, and so on. The reason for this is that we haven't done the installation with sysinstall, so we have to manually adjust this. After that, you can basically add packages, such as the X server and whatever you want. Now, the second solution is with Gailey, but I don't think we have time to do that. If you understand the first solution, it's basically a lot easier to also understand this, because the GPD approach is a lot more complicated. I would just like to focus now on some implications which are very important. So now you've got the system, complete disk encryption, and you feel completely safe, right? Well, not exactly. I want to really tell you what's protected and what is not. So how does the whole thing work? Well, I already told you, attach the removable medium, we boot from it. And we use the removable medium because we cannot trust the unencrypted boot code on the hard disk. We have to boot unencrypted code, but for that reason we have to put it on a medium which we can carry on ourselves at all times. So after we've booted from the removable medium, we mount the encrypted hard disk, and the hard disk is encrypted because we do not want to look after the whole thing all the time. So basically, after you've booted from the removable medium, you have to really detach it and back in your pocket, because the whole code is unencrypted on the boot medium, and if someone manages to compromise it, we are back where we started, so the problem hasn't really been solved. So it's really important that you look after the removable medium, because the code on there is not encrypted. You have the kernel and a lot of other critical code on there that, if it gets compromised, we are back where we started. Now, for your own safety, this is very important. Again, you need the passphrase and the log file and obviously the data to get access. So if you're afraid that you forget the passphrase, it's very important that you choose a strong one, but if you are afraid that you forget it, then please write it down. It's better to write it down than to not have access to your data anymore. But please notice that you keep it apart from the removable medium and the machine itself, so please lock it in a safe place. And also the log file. If it's destroyed or lost or whatever, you don't have access to your data anymore. So if that's, it's certainly a risk. So you should make a copy of the log file. But you shouldn't put it anywhere near the machine or wherever someone has access to it. Basically, if someone manages to get access to the log file, all they need now is the machine, they have to steal the laptop, and they have to know the passphrase. Well, the passphrase, it's a bit difficult to keep that secret. If you have a mobile device, each time you boot up the machine, you have to type in the passphrase. And if someone manages to look over your shoulder, then, well, I'm just saying, it's very difficult to really keep the passphrase secret on a mobile device. So the log file basically gives additional protection, because you need to access it to the data, so keep the log file safe. So what does complete disk encryption not protect from? Well, you have the whole hard disk encrypted, but the problem is really what happens with all the other media. If you have external hard drive attached, then you mount it into the whole Unix namespace. And the problem is, in Unix with the mount facility, you can't. It's hard to tell which medium actually holds what data. So it's very easy to forget, for example, that this directory might be actually an NFS share on a server that's unencrypted with a connection that's unencrypted. So it's very easy that data still leaks actually to a different place than the encrypted hard disk. So always consider that. Now, I've already mentioned disk. As soon as a partition or a hard disk is attached, it's vulnerable. It's you have the whole plain text available, and it also means you can compromise it. You don't have to mount it, it just has to be attached. So as soon as it's attached, it's vulnerable to local and remote attacks. Now, as the OS, the operating system partition, the boot partition must always be mounted. It's always vulnerable to compromise, local and remote. So as soon as you've booted the system up, the boot partition on the encrypted hard disk is not really does not really have any additional protection, so please consider that. The main protection you have is when the machine is turned off. So it's also important to consider that you can't really prevent data destruction by encrypting it. There is not any protection from data destruction, either accidental or intentional. Now, GBD and Gale, they cannot protect against attacks that are aimed at the hardware. So if someone installs a hardware keylogger, then the whole problem, well, you don't have any protection. And I'm not trying to address this because it's a really difficult issue to solve. So what it does protect, well, if the hard disk is not yet attached or already has been detached, then the key is not available and the plain text device node is also not available. So even if the system is up and running, but you have an additional partition such as home, for example, you haven't attached it and you haven't mounted it, then the plain text device node does not exist and the data on it can't be changed to anything useful. So that's a protection you have, it's not attached. Now also, since the whole hard disk is encrypted, you don't have the risk that anything might leak to an unencrypted part. So you don't have to worry about OpenOffice leaking your secret document to the temp directory or whatever it goes. You also don't have to worry where browser caches are actually stored and how much data there is. So you have the whole hard disk really encrypted. And also the swap partition is now encrypted. So a lot of critical data you might find in there cannot really be recovered unless you have the key, the passphrase, and the log file. And you also cannot simply remove the hard disks or the hard disk and read it out on a different system because you have the whole thing encrypted. Now, you have a few trade-offs. Performance, obviously. Decrypting is not a big deal, but encrypting data requires quite a lot of CPU cycles. So the problem we have basically is that input and output operations, which were previously mainly independently done of the CPU, are now tightly coupled to the CPU power because each read and write operation has either to be decrypted or encrypted. So the maximum performance may not be the actual bandwidth of the device, but the power of the processor. And administrative work, obviously you have to set up the whole thing. You also have to maintain it. If you do a system upgrade, you have to do a lot of steps that were initially done. You have to repeat them. And there's also the convenience. Booting off a removable medium is typically slower than booting off a hard disk. And you also have to type in the passphrase each time, which may be a bit inconvenient, but it's a trade-off, so you really have to consider, is it worth it? Now, complete disk encryption protects against two specific attacks. The one is that you just remove the hard disk from the system and install it in a different system and read out the contents. You can't do that anymore if the whole hard disk is encrypted. The problem is, another problem is if you have only one part, just the data encrypted, but not the operating system and the applications. You can compromise the applications at the operating system in order to leak actually the encrypted data or the encryption key. Now with complete hard disk encryption, you can't do that anymore because the operating system and the applications are now encrypted too, so you don't really have that problem anymore. But really, these two basic threats, they are really the only one which complete hard disk encryption protects. You have a lot of other issues that are not solved, so keep that in mind. Well, summing up, yeah. First, determine whether there is actually a risk to your data. If you just use it at home, keep it locked in a safe and use it for checking the weather, then you probably don't need to encrypt the whole hard disk. So determine according to your own situation and environment whether it's really necessary to do complete disk encryption. It's very important to determine the weakest link. Is the weakest link really that an attacker has physical access to the hard disk? If the machine is still very vulnerable to network attacks, then it doesn't make a lot of sense to encrypt the whole hard disk. So if you say, yes, it's a problem, someone might have physical access to the machine and I don't want to leave my data to that risk, you say, well, complete disk encryption, I need to do it. Then be aware of the capabilities and limits of the hardware. So is the machine capable of booting from a USB memory stick? If that's okay, then please understand the trade-offs as we discussed. Then implement with great care. You really have to be careful because typos can, well, basically destroy your data if you choose the wrong device node. So really take your time with the implementation. And then you also have to maintain the whole thing. If you do a system upgrade, you have to do a lot of work to really keep it up to date. And last thing, really understand what does it actually protect and what does it not. So study these things carefully that we have discussed. Yeah, maybe we have some time for Q&A. Yeah?
If you compare this with things like loop IIS or things like that, I think that the log file is a consensus symmetric cipher, and you need an asymmetric cipher to decipher the log, the symmetric cipher that ciphers your disk. Actually, is it? Do I understand it right, or is it something different?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat the last sentence?
Okay. Or I will. We will ask another way. Normally, you have a symmetric cipher, maybe IIS or something, and you have a key for this. And this key is encrypted with another key with asymmetric cipher, and the key file is stored somewhere. And I understand it, and I understood this in the way that the log file is the symmetric cipher that is encrypted by an asymmetric cipher. Is it correct?
Well, the whole GPD thing is quite complex, and I haven't really got into the details of the implementation. But the log file is certainly not the master key. The log file, as I understand it, is one part of the hash of the passphrase. If I'm informed correctly, the passphrase is hashed with SHA-512 bit cipher. And then the log file is one part of that 512 bits. And this is used to locate the master key on the disk somewhere.
But the master key has to be encrypted on the disk, otherwise you would easily compromise it.
Yeah. Well, if you're interested in the details of GPD, then I suggest to read Paul Hennekamp's paper. I really don't know the details of how the whole thing is programmed and organized. The design of GPD is quite complex. You just have to remember that you need the log file to get access to the master key, which is stored on the hard disk. Obviously, it's encrypted, but I can't tell you the details. You really have to read Paul Hennekamp's paper for that.
Okay, we have to finish now in favor for the next workshop. Maybe you can just answer two questions outside.